Blog Talk Radio.
What I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, going out and sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures, sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music, sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry, sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. And when you do this, you've mastered the length of life. This onward push to the end of self-fulfillment is the end of a person's life. Now, don't stop here, though. You know, a lot of people get no further in life than the length. They develop their inner powers. They do their jobs well. Do you know they try to live as if nobody else lives in the world but themselves? And they use everybody as mere tools to get to where they're going. They don't love anybody but themselves. And the only kind of love that they really have for other people is utilitarian love. You know, they just love people that they can use. A lot of people never get beyond the first dimension of life. They use other people as mere steps to which or by which they can climb to their goals and their ambitions. These people don't work out well in life. They may go for a while. They may think they're making it all right. But there is a law. They call it the law of gravitation in the physical universe. And it works. It's final. It's inexorable. Whatever goes up can come down. You shall reap what you sow. God has structured this universe that way. And he who goes through life not concerned about others will be a subject victim of this law. So I move on and say that it is necessary to add breath to length. Now, the breath of life is the outward concern for the welfare of others, as I said. And a man has not begun to live until he can rise above the narrow confines of his own individual concerns to the broader concerns of all humanity.
Don't let adverse facts stand in the way of a good decision. You can't make someone else's choices. You shouldn't let someone else make yours. Check small things. Share credit. Remain calm. Be kind. Have a vision. Be demanding. Don't take counsel of your fears or naysayers. Perpetual optimism is a force multiplier. Words to live by. We honor Colin Powell. Good night.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life, nor liberty, possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor. The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burden both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to a group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with a pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Well, to leave Martin out of it for a moment. Martin's very rare, very great man. Martin's rare for two reasons. Part because just because he is. And because he's a real Christian and he really believes in nonviolence. He's arrived at something in himself, which permits him, allows him to do it. And he still has great moral authority in the South. There's none whatever in the North. Poor Martin has gone through God knows what kind of hell to awaken the American conscience. But Martin has reached the end of his rope. There's something Martin can't do. Martin's only one man. Martin can't solve the nation's central problem by himself.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved.
Dr. King's still talking about racial justice going on in 2021. We're praying tonight for you. This is Dr. Martin Luther King Movement, and I wanted to share some business with you. You know, the police department, the fire department, these are city workers. They in people's face every day. Now, you know, it's like this. If you're gonna let the poor people take care, let the fireman police. About 35 police died of COVID, and the fireman died, and the chief of the union died. This is Dr. Ben. I want him to have a little something to say, and he got some good points.
100% of what reads as the gospel truth, as if the gospel truth is truth. The gospel truth is gospel, and that's the only thing about it. You don't need to call it truth, because to whom it is truth. The biggest problem we have is truth. What do we mean by that? Is anything we hear and became accustomed to and have adopted, and it's true. Not necessarily what we have certified by examining. So it is true that Christianity is the only true religion. It is true that Islam is the only true religion. It's true that Judaism, and I could go on all night by that, and I could get approval of each of those statements for many of you within this audience. And each of you would fight the other over those truths. And yet, no way in any of them is the truth. Because if it was an intrinsic truth, you would not have to fight each other or even have a controversy. The mere fact that you don't agree on truth means it is not true. So let us deal with the things that we can possibly understand. Let us take, the young man asked me when I was in the gentleman's room, not the ladies, of course, just this afternoon. when you came in here. Since I have no background in that, then I must equally ask, why was the question? The question is because it is bothering that young man as to the answer we read in the Bible. And our Judeo-Christian Islamic Bible established a kind of ridiculous position that we cannot get ourselves out. So therefore, God, to most of us, has to be a man or male-like figure. If someone will come to us and say that God is neither male nor female, we got problems. And if we say that God is a hermaphrodite character, what's the problem? I didn't say a homosexual. I said hermaphrodite character. That means that God is both male and female. Well, you will find that when you go to Egypt, when you go to Sudan, and when you go to Ethiopia, as I am returning. Because God, goddess, is always presented in along the Nile as both male and female, or male with female. And you have problems. You have problems because along the Nile, God have intercourse with goddess and have children. Now you got problems with that. Because, you know, Jesus couldn't get anything at all. But Jesus could be saving everybody, dealing with man, dealing with woman, in charge of operation, in charge of menstruation, in charge of homosexuality, in charge of everything. Matter of fact, nothing can happen without God in it. Now, if nothing can happen without God in it, how come you man with God can't happen unless God wanted to happen? That's your statement. Nothing in this world can happen without God's intervention. And if God would want it, it wouldn't happen. But you can't tell me, then, how is it that God got so angry and drunk the world the last time? Leaving only one family. 40 days in the boat, of course, two of everything. I was trying to measure that boat the other day. And I found that the boat is not as big as this building. 20 cubits is less than the length of this building. And had two of everything. It didn't have two African lions, of course, or one. We don't need to mention that. I hesitated because I know I give you a chance to figure. Having the tail of one dinosaur would have been difficult, much less the body of a dinosaur. I just want to establish how we see truth. And truth, if we would say, to me, truth, if we are going to talk about a God concept, would be the original of anything, as a matter of fact. So when I speak of the concept of a deity, I'm primarily dealing with one that comes from the center of Africa and among one group of people. The people that you may call by the ridiculous name which the English call them, indigenous people call themselves Twa and Hutu. And in Egypt, they were called Sebenitos. In the southern tip of Africa, they call themselves Khoi Khoi and Kalahari. You call them in the southern tip of Africa, Hottentot, like the Europeans do. But fail to remember that when those people were presenting to the world, their world, any form, any aspect of a deity, Jehovah, Jesus, no Allah was anywhere around. I need to repeat that again and make it more clear for most of you. I said that when the Africans in the central part of Africa was dealing with the concept of a deity, God and a goddess, no one in the world, any place in the world, even previous time was the deity symbolized by the sun. Not the sun. Never once did the Africans preach that any material thing or any other animal was the deity, but used these as symbols of the deity. Many of you will be going to Egypt quite soon, out of the continent, and you would go and come back with the same mythology that missionaries have placed in your mind. You would talk of the sun god, and that the ancient Egyptians and others of Africa worshipped animals, birds, etc. And that isn't true. It's a saying, it is a saying that Christians worship the cross. And you know that it's not true. It's a symbol. When you see, and that just presents to us, I've just been reading some articles dealing with a conference in Canada in which many of the scholars, biblical scholars, particularly biblical or archaeologically, archaeology, especially at this time when Passover is here, stated that there is no evidence, no physical evidence of the Passover ever happening. That messed you up. But I'll make it better for you. There is no evidence at all in Egypt of the Hebrew people living at the time when they were supposed to, worst of all, being slaves in Egypt. There is no record whatsoever in Egypt of a Hebrew people, one of them by the name of Joseph. There is no record of a prime minister in Egypt by the name of Potiphar. And there is no record of a man living in any of the pharaoh's home by the name of Moses. No record whatsoever. Let me get a little better for you. The first Hebrew or Jew, whatever name you want to call him, and that again would make me anti-Semitic. Until the Africans along the Nile were about in the 13th dynastic period, that the first Hebrew or Jew, Abram, was born, and that would put us around 1675, let's be generous, the 1700 before the Common Era, which you would refer to before the Christian Era. Yet, you have facts, and facts upon which you work daily, none of which coincide with the information I'm bringing to you. But the reason is that you have no reference, for the most part you had, I should say, prior to the revolution that started in the 1960s, died down, started again in the 1970s, highlighted by the expose of Dr. Jeffries, which many people are sorry now that they even touched, because what they have done, instead of damaging Dr. Jeffries, they have brought to the forefront information which other people would not have known.
That's right.
Many people are going to, who had no intent of studying more about the Passover, the Christian crucifixion period. Many people who thought that it is Rome that has given them, most of us in here, and most of us outside of here, believe that we became Christians because we were lucky to be in slavery in one Western colonial power or another. Very few of us have any idea that even Christianity started on African soil. We knew, and I'm not dealing with the to remind yourself to look at the map, because Egypt, the last time I said a month ago, was still in Africa, even though I heard it in a place called Middle East. But it was Pantheus and Boethius who started when they revolted from the synagogue and started an extension of what was a teaching that preceded Jesus by more than 4,000 years. Thus, when you see Jesus, you are seeing the rebirth of a person that existed 4,100 years before Jesus and Mary. If you call Mary Isis, and that's the Greek word, let us say Isis, or Isis, call Jesus Heru, or you want to use the Greek word Horus. And then you call Jehovah Asaru or Asara. You will speak about three personalities or deities who gave you your Jesus figure. If you will take the story of those three Africans along the Nile, add 4,000 years to your Jesus, 6,000 years ago then, you will have Christianity before Christ. That is hard to understand. What I'm saying to you is that when you go to Egypt with sisters, Betty, I don't care who you go to Egypt with as long as you get there. Because when you get there, you've got to go to Abydos. That's where I am right now. I'm in the southern part of Egypt at a place called Abydos. I'm in the temple of Chetai I. He is the king, the pharaoh king, who was reigning in Egypt up to 1298. And in one of the chapels next to a holy of holies, this temple has seven holy of holies. And next to the left one, upon entering, is a small chapel that shows the Immaculate Conception of Isis. The birth of her child, Horus, 4,100. Not only you would be on the only holy land. I'm not talking about Jerusalem. I'm not talking about Bethlehem, and I'm certainly not talking about Mecca, the last of the holy land. I am speaking about the first holy land mankind ever knew. What's sad about it is that it's your holy land I'm speaking about, and you know less about it than anybody else. Abydos was a holy land that the people of ancient times flocked and came to, no less so than people flocked to go to Mount Ararat and the times when the Muslims have the Great Hajj again. But we have the truth, and we deal with truth, the one and only truth. Yet we don't know this truth, the first of the truths of all the religious concepts. Religious concepts that we even carried all the way to India. Africans who carried it there, so-called untouchable. Yet they still call them Tumuls, T-U-M-U-L, and we call them Dravidians. These same untouchables gave to India, the Indians of the North, the Bhagavad Gita, and gave them the concept of their own Bible. And the Indians themselves, the Hindu themselves, noted the fact that they got the concept of their Bible. What else did they carry? They carried there the worship of Goddess Hathor, symbolized as a house. The same Hathor which the Jews worship, the same Hathor which Moses is supposed to have a fight with his brother Aaron on the mountain that you call the sacred cow. So when you go to Egypt, Sari, the second, Abydos, I'm sorry, and Abu Simbel. He was killed dramatically at the temple of Hatshepsut, the funerary temple at Deir Hebal, on the west bank of the River Nile. And most of all, you would see her most dramatically in the temple dedicated to her at a place called Dendera. While we mention the name Dendera, and I look and see in the audience of most of the time, the sisters predominantly, it is at Dendera that you see how the African presented the quality by showing her as gotten soot in the ceiling, given birth to the sun. The sun passing through her vagina in the morning, spreading its rays of light. And within those rays of light, goddess Hathor, holding its fragrance of what is called the tree of life. Not an anti-life tree, as you would find in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, a forbidden fruit tree. This is one of life. She smiles because the rays from the sun coming through the vagina of God, that's
now this photographic
in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, this is pornography. You can't talk about rays and sun coming through the vagina. We don't even admit for babies coming through vagina. If a woman wanted to talk about a given birth for babies, and I'm talking to her husband. I'm not even mentioning her boyfriend. She gotta be a kind of afraid to let people know that a baby came through there, even though she came through one. You understand what's going on. And then most mothers are afraid to even admit that they had sex, married or not married. I mean, you can understand how these things get. But the ancient Egyptian along the Nile had no problem with any of this. So when you planning to go to Egypt on the walls and on the columns all over Egypt, you're going to see sexual explanation not only by words, but by pictures. You will see God, the God of fertility, constantly at all times when you see him. And you're going to see him every way you cast your eyes, with a penis that's completely erected, to the point that sometimes it has a curvature. But you will also notice that the ancient Africans, though showing the sexuality of the god of fertility, did not show the penis coming from his crotch, but instead coming from his umbilical cord, his navel. That's showing that the sexual intercourse not only is the deity, but it is life continuous. Because the penis is nothing but an extension of the umbilical cord. As I said, you can't deal with that today in the synagogue, yesterday in the mosque. And you certainly can't deal with it tomorrow in the church. Yes, it is the thing you should be dealing with tomorrow. Because without it, there's no life. And the resurrection scene, the first resurrection scene, as it enters the temple, Abydos is the resurrection of Osiris Venus from a dead horizontal to a perpendicular. The Masonic lodges read about this someplace, got messed up from England and France, and while wearing a top hat, silk top hat, a wingtip shirt, a cutaway jacket looking like penguin. Feeling that they got something great, not knowing the source and with such thing as the Grand Lodge of Luxor and would not come to Luxor. They will go only to Israel and turn around. And maybe they would come to Cairo to see the pyramids, and they know pyramids in Cairo. The pyramids in Giza, the closest one, across the river from Cairo. Misinformation, misinformation, but still the truth. The only truth. And that is the media. The media is typical of our religion. It's typical of our theology. It's typical of our culture. The media only is a reflection of one aspect, a bad reflection. Of course, we got to deal with it. But I'm just trying to show you how damaging it is. It is as damaging as the information we get sitting down in the pew on Sunday, sitting down in the pew on Saturday, and sitting down in the pew on Friday or any other time. Now, before you got mad and leave and said that man is anti-resistant, I'm not. I know you don't believe that. You believe that. You believe that I'm the Antichrist. But in that I'm not. I don't have three names. Each name is better. So then I can't be the Antichrist. When I got three names, each name with six letters, they call me the Antichrist, and I'd be glad to respond. Thank you. I am different than that. My wife up to this morning said to me, "Oh, God, man." Do you understand what that was? Problem with who I am, you know, no. And I guess she wouldn't use that term unless it was real. Well, what we are saying, and I've done it a little humor here and there, but what I am saying to you is that you cannot sit down home. You must go with the Betty or somebody else to very valid deeds. Some of us come to Egypt, I mean to Israel, and then we come over to Giza, Cairo for some, and we go and watch one of the three worlds. I said the world because there are pyramids in Central America, and of course there are pyramids in Sudan. Most of us don't even know there are pyramids in Sudan. There are 82 in Egypt and there are 37 in Sudan. Otherwise, a area called Meroe. But the largest of all the pyramids, those of the 4th dynasty, around 2700 plus before the Common Era, they will come to the largest one in particular. That's what most people like to go when they're going up inside to see nothing inside. Just a good climb up about 10 stories, walking in this way. And when you come down, in this way, some people are telling you they've been there and saw it. I stopped going up because my knee can't make it anymore. But they will come there and touch the pyramid. Go up, take sure. Look at the stone. See not one single brick made of any material, and yet leave this and say, "I saw the pyramid the Jews built out of mud and straw." No, you talk about behavior modification. You're talking about Pavlov dog. And names are other things. That is mind-blowing. And you're talking about people that have been made to think and act like fools. Because if you see the thing, you go up to it, you touch it, and you must still say that it is what you did not see solely because you were told that and ashamed and afraid for someone to say that you are going against what is being told. Refuse to deal. refuse to deal with reality. Yet there is a single brick made of mud and straw or water. The pyramid you are going to see there, the stones were hewn, cut from a mountain about 5 miles away from those pyramids at the Giza Plateau. A mountain called Mukata Mountains. And carried in the inundation period over there. People, we are so gullible that you will find people come to Egypt, some of us, to see the pyramids that were built by the top down. What happened with the skyhook that was connected to the cloud? What happened? The clouds move and there's no clouds today. Are you mean to say, they said, no, it was built by men with great minds who could suspend the block. All right. But look, let us see. The largest one is 48 stories high. That's about 481 feet tall. What happened when night came and they couldn't see the work? The fourth guy stood and still suspended. When he had the 80 bars so, now the dog to the 8 gets pulled, and all underneath there. Till the put the last, the stick the last stone underneath and drive it, sure enough, between the earth and the sea. How dumb can you get? But again, we want to believe things that are not, because it gives us the opportunity as what Sister Betty and the brother, Dr. Manson, was telling you just a while ago. It is better to say, I will read the newspaper, than to say, I will do the work. I will read and see what they did, and I will say, yes, they're doing good work. But I will not do and I will not give towards good work. And that's why you get such bad information, because you wouldn't do good work. It is worse than that. I'm trying to get African scholars, quote unquote, to come to Egypt, to Sudan, to Ethiopia, and elsewhere to do field research, first-hand information. But we are satisfied with taking out a book. We condemn the European writer. But the European writer is in Egypt every day. He's in Sudan every day. Therefore, what he writes, he puts his interpretation. Quite recently, some people at the University of Chicago have to admit that Seale, one of the greatest Egyptologists, wrote that they found many of the things that he had written were complete and total lies. But they did not say Seale lied. Though they admitted to a lie, he made academic miscalculations. And that's why many of my colleagues at the university and I couldn't get along, because if I thought it was a guy who was a liar, he's a blasted liar. A damn liar. And I may come up with an MF liar. Because I realized that the Pope can't make any rules for me to follow and tell me which language is profane and which was fame. It ain't nobody profane or profane than he. So for him to tell me what I could say, it's just like you know, when I say some of my choice little four-letter words, if I get hot enough, then you say, that man always says dirty. What isn't dirty? If the word exists, I can't be dirty using it, expressing myself with the sweetness of the Lord. for him. He got to be the wealth of anyway. And throw his daughter around her. And the juice, the magic that's coming from her body and hit Jesus. I mean. If there might have been another Good Friday. But you can't think in that term. Immediately you are thinking that he's sacrilegious. No, I'm not sacrilegious. I am conscious of the integrity of the African woman, of the strength of the African woman. You understand me, brothers? I know some of you brothers may not know because you have never tried a black woman. But try one, it's good for your soul. I said try one because when you come to Egypt, you're going to see how the African brother projected the African sister. The African brother didn't go around, man, I can't get me a good, it's hard to get me a good black woman. I don't know, but I'll leave that for another comment. How can he say this when all other people in the world were not writing, expressing themselves? The African men were in the temple, in the ceilings, long before, thousands of years before Michelangelo, were in the ceilings painting the African woman as goddess. In one case, they painted the African woman as goddess look over the head of every pharaoh was a double goddess look back to back, like the Caribbean song, back to back, and done there, the goddess did the rest. And up there, put stars on her body. And showed her of the goddess of truth and justice. In other places, they show her as the goddess of the universe, of the sky. And then he showed himself as the god of the god of Yeshua. He called the goddess. He showed the god of the earth, yes, holding her hands and her foot, her feet apart while her body takes the shape of a semicircle. And you know what the caption reads? God, you have one hand. The right hand cover her vagina. The left hand cover the two nipples of her breast. And the caption reads, Goddess Nut, as heaven, God shoot covering the two columns of heaven. And you're looking in the air. And heaven gave birth to you. Heaven is the place to return of a man. Heaven is the place that makes you happy. Heaven is a place with a deep, deep, listen to your Bible. It's deep. Where is the place that man came from originally? you have to drive. That side that we can't look up because of the roadblocks. We can't look because we are so conditioned by sexual stabbing. We can't talk. A woman cannot marry but cannot come to her husband in bed naked. She must come with all kind of clothes and then get underneath the seat and slip this off and slice that off and all this shit. And he too. Because they're married but each are the same of the other. To see what each knows the other got. Truth. It's truth. The reality of marriage. Culture in which we live. Married. Have a good life, don't touch the girl, come to bed virgin, you can prove it, she can. The bed virgin, she's at a disadvantage. But you come to the bed virgin, then you have to, you get a little exercise, you know what I mean? You can't even call it sex. But the baby, let's say, you marry, you went through all that. You, the man, didn't have any sexual intercourse. How can touch your own self for a bad? She the woman did likewise. You are pure. Me. And I wouldn't say you because you're a pretty man. But you, the single woman who don't mind me touching you. Tonight in the honeymoon castle, untouched by human hands, even their own. We get up in the next honeymoon castle, built up by all kind of hands. And we have a little bit, they have a little bit. But the funny thing is, true, their baby is going to be born in the same sin as our baby going to be born. Now, what reason do I have not to get a little peace? before the wedding, if the baby is born of them, going to be born in sin. And that's what we have to do is truth. And the Bible says that it's not an ending situation. Truth is an everlasting search for answer. Truth is the light that says. And I don't think light is that important anyhow because, you see, light is substitute. Like the other day I was there and the brothers, and I said, all the lights didn't work. And I said, oh, good, I'm going to get this TV. And why not? Because this one was ripping me off all the time. It was my turn to rip off somebody. I believe in the 13th commandment. It says, thou shalt, if thou art arrogant, get what thou want, what thou need from other people.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor. The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor
white and Negro bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counters.
Well,
it didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will. At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres.